Accession number 18788, Reel 1.
My name is Stan Turton and I was a stoker aboard HMS Spartan at her commissioning in 1943 at Barrow in Furness. After we'd worked the ship up and done various jobs, we were sent to join 15th Cruiser Squadron in the Med in October 1943. After various trials and indeed tribulations, we ended up at Bizerta on Christmas Eve 1943 to take a convoy back to Gibraltar, which took us about a week. We spent New Year there and then returned to the Central Med. From there, in due course, we ended up at Taranto, southern Italy, and then later into Naples Bay. Whilst we were at Taranto, we had a rating jump ship, and consequently, we had to have a replacement rating sent aboard us. At the time I'm speaking of, I was watchkeeping in the after boiler room, B boiler room that is. Now, my duties were to man the one of the boilers, and my petty officer of the watch was called Eric Chitty. I got on very well with Eric and we were firm friends. Anyway, I was sent for by the chief stoker and he told me I'd have to move part of ship for watchkeeping, and consequently I could no longer be with Eric, and I was very upset about this and didn't like the idea. Anyway, he was quite adamant and he wouldn't listen to any arguments at all, so I was moved to the forward boiler room, which is a boiler room, and this new rating was moved in with Eric. Anyway, around about the, I think it was the 22nd of January 1944, we moved up to station to do the Anzio landings, which we didn't know that we were going there initially, obviously, but anyway we did. And this was, as I say, about the 22nd of January, and we had quite a hectic time up there when initially it was quite quiet and the Germans were caught on the hop, as it were. But through things which had nothing to do with us as ordinary matlows, the thing all went pear-shaped, and we had quite a hectic first week up there, doing various jobs, various shoots, and continual aircraft in the area, German aircraft that is. So much so that we eventually went back down to Naples for refuel and re-ammo and whatever. Returning up to Anzio around about the 27th, I would think. Anyway, we picked our duties up again. And things were going along quite swimmingly. We were still doing a lot of fire support for the troops ashore and that sort of stuff. We were doing quite well for ourselves overall. It was quite hectic. We were at action stations quite a lot of the time, which is very, very tiring. Anyway, it came the 29th of January, which I think, if my memory serves, was a Saturday. We were allocated anti-aircraft guard for the night, which normally I would have thought we would have laid off a mile or two from the beachhead and kept moving. However, we didn't. We were about 2 miles offshore and we'd actually got one hook down, one anchor down. I could never understand that, but that was out of question that. Around about during the I was on watch during the dog watches. which, as you're probably unaware, the dog watches are 4 while 6 and 6 while 8 p.m. That's in the afternoon, 1600 to 2000 hours. Anyway, during this period of time, we had a red air raid warning, which is imminent attack. And from over the land, a bunch of aircraft attacked, came in. Apparently, I didn't actually see them, of course, I was on watch below. At around about less than 1,000 feet, and dropped several of these glider bombs, which we knew about, having been witnessed the previous week to the destroyer Janus being sunk by one of these. And subsequently, I was in hospital later in the year with one of the survivors, and we swapped stories, of course. Anyway, this bomb hit us at where the after fighting top is, and it penetrated right down and split the ship's side, so we're told. Well, of course, we was on watch, and there was a hell of a bang and an impact. All the lights went out, all the gunfire stopped, which had been a tremendous barrage that had been put up, and everything stopped dead. All you could hear was the steam hissing and people running and shouting up top, and all our secondary lighting came on, and we were just stuck waiting. By and by, the chief ERA of the watch said to the stoke PO, go up top and have a look and see what's happening, see if you can get any sense. We were cut off from communication, with no communication at all, with no main power or anything. And we had started to take quite an ominous list to port. And the Stoker Pure came by and said that there was a fire aft, and there were ready-use ammunition flying about as it caught fire, and which sustained a considerable damage, which we guessed we had. Anyway, we still had to stick to our post, and a bit later on, the chief RA said to me, look, go up top, go along the starboard passage to the forward engine room and tell the chief ERA that we have got a full head of steam and that the main steam valve from A boiler room is open, which implies that we were ready to go and keep steam up, which was quite true. We had. I went and gave this message down the hatch to the chief ERA and made my way back down into the boiler room, which is down two ladders into the very bottom of the ship, onto the plates. The ship was listing quite a lot by this time, and time had passed, and I would think it was in the region of about 1900 hours, nearly 7 p.m. and still the ship was listing. Eventually we were getting very, very worried, all of us, no doubt about that, and obviously we couldn't leave our post, so it was very, very traumatic to just to stick it out, stood doing nothing virtually except waiting orders. Eventually, the ship took such a list that I would think she must have had something in the order of 30 degree list. It was really a real list. And the chief ERA said, look, that's it. He released the main valves, released all the steam pressure, and this is right, boys, up top. And we scrambled up the ladders, which was quite a job anyway, with the list. We got into the airlock, opened the airlock, and let ourselves into the starboard passage. The main X door was shut tight and all the hand dogs were on tight, as we should be. We managed to knock these off, opened the door by brute force using the geared wheel onto the stoker's mess deck. The mess deck was in a hell of a state. There was loose gear, crockery, mess traps, water, which was starting to come down the hatch on the port side. We scrambled as best we could across the mess deck. There were several of us, I can't say how many, but there was no more, well, it was the boiler room hands that were there. I would think there'd be a couple of stokers, myself included. Chief ERA, torpedoman, and I don't know about that's all. Anyway, when we got eventually up the hatch from the stoker's mess deck, we looked to the port waist and realised it was half underwater. Now, the main thought in our minds was that if she was going to capsize, she would roll onto us. So we turned and dived into the flat just by the break of the forecastle, which had an exit at the other side, the same as this one. Fastened along the bulkhead running athwartships were the hammock nettings, which are steel receptacles, really, with steel bars across, which in normal circumstances the seamen's hammocks are stored in this. By the time we got to these, the deck was impassable. You could not walk up the deck, it was so steep. It was practically on its beam ends. So we climbed up these, like I said, the monkeys up the ladder, and got onto the starboard side, standing on the bulkhead by the sick bay, which at this time was being finished evacuated of the wounded by other ratings, who were doing a marvellous job. Nothing much we could do, so we decided we would get onto the ship's side and make the best of it. We had one incident which could have been tragic, but wasn't. Later on, we laughed about it. Was where the galley was, the doorway was obviously swung open, and of course all the deck was tiled. And this lad, we tried to jump across. Well, we did jump across the opening to the other bulkhead. Bear in mind now, the bulkhead is our floor, our deck. And we jumped across the opening, and this guy slipped, and he fell into the galley. Well, he would never have got out. We had to help him. So somebody had the bright idea of fastening our belts together, which made a line, and we pulled him out of it. And we all eventually got on the ship's side. My memory of this is that there was, I don't know what it was, some type of ship taking hands off at the forward end. I walked down the ship's side to the stabiliser, the starboard stabiliser, which was well out of the water, and on the way down I came across a good pal of mine, another stoker, Jack Connor, a little Geordie fella, and together we sat with our feet dangling, sat on the stabiliser with our feet dangling over the water. And daft as it sounds, we both took our shoes off as if we were going for a paddle, blew our lifebelts up, and said, "Well, that's it, Jack." We just shook hands and jumped. And by this time it was quite dark. And for years after this, I had an old wristwatch which I wore at the time, and it said 5 minutes past 7, 1907. in other words, like 1905 rather. And I kept this watch for years after, but it gradually got lost. And that must have been the time I went into the water. Now, I'm told of late that the ship actually rolled over capsized at about 10 past, so we haven't got a deal of time between then and now. I know I swam away from the ship, as quite in others were doing, and eventually I turned over for a rest and floated on my back, and I couldn't see the ship. She must have gone. And I just carried on, and like others were doing, at that time I started to tread water because I was getting very tired, and I didn't know how long I was going to be in the water. About this time there was quite a lot of noise and what have you, gunfire, and I think it was an ammo ship went up with a bump, and quite a lot of light fire, and out of the darkness a figure came splashing towards me, and it was wearing an American style life preserver, which is a huge thing that fits onto you like a waistcoat, and with a huge collar on it. I would have thought it was impossible to sink in one of these things. And this guy was in a panic, and he got me round the neck, and he was damn near going to drown me in his panic. So actually I was quite a good swimmer, and I got my life saving certificate in any case as a kid. And when he came at me again, I just had to belt him, Mum, which I did, and he went on his way and splashed away into the darkness. It was a lot safer than I was with this life jacket on, American life jacket, because they were huge things, and I can't imagine anybody sinking in one of them. And eventually I was picked up by the bomb defence ship, which was manned by part British Matlows, Royal Navy, and American Army personnel. I can't remember what time this was, but it was, you know, sometime after, you know, no means of knowing the time by this time. It was quite dark. And these guys pulled us out of the water, and all I got was what I stood up in, of course, which was a boiler suit, which had got well and truly ripped. No good at all, really. And underneath the boiler suit, I got my money belt, which happened to have £2 English money in it, which I'd had since leaving the UK, which came in extremely handy later on for me. And these guys took us back down into their mess. I think it was, I'm not sure on this, I think it was HMS Barlow. Anyway, it was a bomb defence ship. And they did wonders, these guys. And eventually they came alongside Dido, and they took us aboard and gave us a hot bath, hot drinks, and nice tot of rum. And we settled down in Dido. She eventually set off for Naples, and whilst en route to Naples, we had an e-boat scare, which I believe she engaged this group of e-boats, and we eventually were left alone. About this time, I was told by one of my oppos that Eric Chitty had been seriously hurt. So I went to the sick bay in Dido to inquire about him. And I was spoken to by a medic. I'm assuming it was a doctor. It could have been a senior sick berth attendant. And I asked him after Eric. And he said, who are you, sort of thing? Because I had no badge insignia or anything. And I told him I was his ex-watchkeeping oppo. And he said, I've got bad news for you. Eric's been killed. But I was told later that he'd actually got out of the ship into the water to the gash in the ship's side, and he was hit by a shell splinter and of course killed. The young fellow that took my place watch keeping was also killed. He'd only been in the Navy about 4 months, and I was absolutely devastated about Eric. I couldn't believe it. He was such a lively bloke, so full of life. And, you know, I didn't really regard him as, which he was a senior rating, obviously to me, but I've never forgotten him, and I never shall. I don't know what else I can say to you about this. We got back down to Naples, eventually, in what we stood up in, which is next to nothing. And we were put aboard an ex-Royal Marine Commando ship called Winchester Castle, which had been converted for their use. And we were tied up alongside a Red Cross ship, which had been sunk in Naples Harbour, lying on the side, and it was being used as a jetty. And we went ashore a couple of times in Naples with no money, with nothing, and it was absolutely cram jam full of refugees, Italians and whatever. And a few days later, we'd been gradually given battle dress as kit, but nothing else. And we were told we were going to be shipped back down to Algiers, which we did. We joined this French transport, which had got British Army personnel aboard her, and it was an absolute pig of a boat. It was scruffy and food was terrible, hardly any water, drinking water, couldn't have a wash or anything, in a right old state. The only thing they got was lots of cigarettes. And it took us 5 days to get from Naples to Algiers, where we went ashore into an old French barracks, which went under the name of HMS Hannibal. But that itself is another story. On reading recently from material sent to me by Pat, I was very surprised to learn that, first of all, Captain of Spartan, McLaughlin, Captain McLaughlin, abandoned ship, not really realising that there were still people on watch below the ship. Now, he'd got his own reasons for that. He probably was totally unaware of what was happening. But we were actually on watch, waiting orders, and we had got this steam up. Reading about the inquiry that the main steam valve from a boiler room was shut, I can assure anybody that that valve wasn't shut, it was open. It must have been jammed shut on the other side. We were all ready for going. And I find it very surprising that a ship as modern as that, for its secondary power, have got to rely on pumps and diesel engines to make power. They must have had, you know, it don't seem right to me, but anyway, that's by the way. It's all academic now, and well, what more can one say? The other thing, the senior engineer's statement was, in my opinion, spot on. He was a very experienced man, and he knew what he was talking about at the inquiry. He must have worked it out that the valve was jammed, which he stated, and no one knew it was jammed, unfortunately. It was just really an educated guess. I find it rather upsetting, even after all this time, that the Admiralty and the British government decided to scrap Spartan, or make a scrap, sell it for scrap. After all, I would have thought it could have been designated as a war grave and left in peace where it was, because we did our best in that ship and nobody could say any other. However, we did go on to fight another day when we joined Aurora and carried on for over 2 more years on the med station, well past the end of the war. When we came home in 46, I remember going into Devonport Barracks from Portsmouth, beautiful spring day, and on telling the reception staff who we were and applying for survivor's lease straight away, they looked as if we'd got 2 heads. We were quite a curiosity all that time afterwards. It's a long time ago now though.